Mission Kona Podcast, where our focus is on highlighting age group athletes doing amazing things in the triathlon space. My name is Michelle Payne.
And I am Mike Payne. We are husband and wife, amateur triathletes, parents, and self-proclaimed coffee connoisseurs, both working in corporate America.
Mike is also a triathlon coach and recently qualified for Kona in October of 2023.
Michelle completed her first half Ironman in 2021 and plans to race a full Ironman in the near future.
This podcast is a journey to discovering what it takes to be competitive in triathlon, sharing stories, and finding the inspiration to go after challenging but worthwhile goals.
Thanks for joining us. We're glad you're here. Welcome to Mission Kona Podcast, the podcast that highlights age group athletes and their mission to Kona. Mike here.
And I'm Michelle.
And today we are interviewing an awesome athlete, someone who's on a mission to Kona, Jennifer Volman. Welcome, Jennifer, to the podcast.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So I'll just give a couple quick highlights for Jennifer. So she's been racing for a few years. She's had podiums at 70.3 Lake Placid, as well as 70.3 Indian Wells. And 2022 was a highlight year for sure. So she got the chance to race two World Championship Ironmans, the Ironman World Championship in May at St. George, as well as Kona, her first Kona. So what a fun year to have both of those races in one.
Yeah. And I think Jennifer had a pretty cool achievement last year as well, which hopefully she can share with us in more of the extreme triathlon world. Jennifer, why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah. So I won the Servation Extreme Triathlon in Utah. So if you know the Extreme Tri, it's like Ironman brand. They have these like different extreme triathlons and Switzerland and Patagonia, et cetera. Their big one is Norseman. So I won a spot to Norseman. So that's the extreme triathlon world championship.
That is awesome. So yeah, I know of Norseman, and it's something that I've followed, and I know it's like a freezing cold swim. And then you like run up a mountain, you bike mm-hmm. through some crazy terrain, and then you run up a mountain. You need like a pacer, don't you, for that race
yep.
as well?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Cause they don't trust you by yourself.
I had one for this one as well. And I think I needed one. I think I would have been lost in the wilderness without my pacer.
It's amazing. Like what triathletes do to themselves. Like Ironman is not enough. Let's go do a extreme Ironman.
Oh, no, it took me 17 hours and I won.
Oh my gosh.
That is awesome. Time. So cool. So Jennifer, let's hear more about you. So why don't you just do a quick introduction about who you are, where you live, your training, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So I live in Phoenix and I have been doing triathlons for 6 years now, but I never did sports as a kid. So like I have zero background in any sports period, let alone like in swim, bike and running. So I came as like a brand newbie to the sport, and then quickly fell like passionately in love with it, and learned all the things and I'm still learning all the things. And so I just really like dove all into triathlons when I got into it. I have an 8-year-old daughter, so I had given birth to her. I left my job. I was executive director of a nonprofit and like kind of didn't know who I was. And so triathlon became my like outlet to figure out like who I wanted to be now and like what would it take to me to be a really good athlete. So I dove into like the journey of becoming like a really good athlete. And that's where triathlon really took off. And now I'm a coach. So I coach mostly new triathletes, a lot of beginners that are coming, because I remember like looking at a YouTube video for hours trying to figure out how to like put my front wheel back on with nobody telling you that like the, you know, like this what are the little springs have to be turned a certain way. Like is the beginner level that I was. and so I love working with new athletes who are like really kind of terrified about triathlon because it's like all the things, and helping them like piece through like how do you start from very beginning all the way up. And now I've had people compete in Ironmans, and I have one athlete doing that extreme tri that I did. He's going to compete in it this year. So I've coached somebody to do a double Ironman distance. So I coach kind of the spectrum. And I also do mindset coaching with that. So the mindset, both in like, how do you race, but also then how do you change your mindset for all of life? So I'm just really passionate about helping people become better versions of themselves, like whatever they want to make more of in their life. If it's more sports, is it more better relationships? Is it more in their career? Whatever it is, I like to help people do that. And then I also run a cycling company, Costa Rica. I co-own it with my business partner, and we do it 3 times a year. It's 5 days of like super intense, amazing riding in Costa Rica.
Sign me up. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. It's incredible. We ride with like a local group down there. The rides are like spectacular. So we do that. So that's 3 times a year. We go to Costa Rica and do that for 5 days.
That sounds amazing.
Well, Michelle actually sent me something that was very similar. I wonder if it's through your company or through that organization, but she was like, we should go to Costa Rica.
I know that's been like a dream of ours for sure to get.
Like, let's go to Cancun. And she's like, no, I don't want to sit on the beach. I want to go do something.
We've come to the realization like beach vacations are fine for like short term, but like we'd much rather be active in cool places.
Right. Like, get me in the mountains or get me in, trails. Yeah.
Anywhere where you're like in it. So I think it's called Pura Vida Cycling Challenge. So for anybody who's looking for an adventure, and it makes you super fit on the bike. So I highly suggest it. If you're ready to race this year, it's awesome.
Is it mountain biking primarily there or?
No, it's all roads. We do all road cycling.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, I think it's fun to hear, like, just how you said, you didn't necessarily have that athletic background. So you said really no sports growing up, or did you kind of just do the team stuff?
No, because I can't catch anything. Like I literally if you threw something, I would like cover my face and duck right now. And then I'm not fast. Like I don't have a lot of fast twitch muscles because that turns out I was built for endurance, but I didn't know that. So like, there's not a lot of high school sports that are made for people who can't catch something and who's not very fast. So I never did any of it. So I would run trails. I grew up in Phoenix. So I would like run trails a lot. And I've always been like in shape, but I've never done it. Like I never thought I was an athlete until I was like 30. And no. I did CrossFit and like the coach called me an athlete. I was like, oh, am I? I've never been one. Could I be that?
Yeah. So in school, you were like the last one picked, but now it's like, hey, Jennifer's like an amazing athlete. She won an extreme triathlon. She competed at the world championships. And that's pretty cool. I love that.
My grandpa, he was like 97 at the time. He's passed now, but he came to like this local sprint try that I did and I won it. And I was like, hey, Papa, I won. He's like, you did? And I was like, yeah, I won it. He's like, no, you didn't. I was like, you just watched me. He's like, really? Like, he was so shocked. I'm like, I could win something. But good thing you lived to be 97 so you could see it. Because that's how long it took.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So what was your first triathlon race that you did? So I know you said you started staying home with your daughter looking for kind of something to occupy your time, in addition to being a mom, which occupies a lot of time as well. what like drew you to the sport, and what was the first triathlon you signed up for?
Well, it's funny. So I'd always swam. I was a self-taught swimmer. So in college, I would just like swim forever. When I got pregnant, I couldn't run. And so I started swimming again. And I was doing CrossFit, and my CrossFit coach's partner is Marilyn Chakota. She was a pro triathlete. She coaches triathlon. She's really well known in the industry. And she would lift with me. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll ask her. So I was like, hey, I've been swimming a lot. You know, I like swim for an hour. I want to get faster. She's like, well, what do you do? I was like, well, I just swim for an hour. She's like, do you stop? I was like, no, I just, she's like, really? And then I would like run from my house to CrossFit, do a CrossFit class, do Olympic lifting and run home. So it's like a 5 mile run plus all of this, which is not like how you get faster. And so she was like, you know, have you ever considered like triathlon? I think maybe like that might be a better fit for you. Like, you should try this. And so that's what got me thinking about doing it was her suggestion. And then my first race was a sprint distance, like swim was in a pool. I had a road bike. I call it mama bike. So it was like a road bike, you know, like a basic beginner bike. I didn't even have like, I didn't have like bike shorts to wear. Like I just, it was like, all, you know, look at it now. You're like, wow. But it was awesome. And I was like totally hooked the first time that I did it.
Yeah. That is really cool. So now did she start coaching you, or did you find a different coach eventually, or?
No. Yeah, she's been my coach the whole time. It's funny. She used to just write, she would write like, here's 5 sessions, just repeat this for 6 weeks on a piece of paper. So I would have this like little piece of paper and I would like go ride and go do this and go do this. And then eventually she like put me on Training Peaks. And I was like, where's this space? What easier hear this piece of paper you've given me. I feel like I didn't have a heart rate strap. Like we went like, I mean, when I say beginner, like she rode behind me up a mountain in Phoenix off mount, like telling me how to click my gears, like shift here, shift now. She would get in front of me and show me how to descend, like very, very beginner. And she really like took me underneath her wing. And then she's brought me up like slowly through the ranks. And she was actually my support crew on Starvation. When I did that, she was my, like my SAG person. And
yeah.
So she's been with
me. That's cool. She's been a hands-on coach. And like, it's a lot of times you hear about coaches that are only virtual and it's really hard to be able to like actually go for a ride with somebody and actually give them more attention. Yeah. But that's a great introduction to the sport and kind of takes down some of those barriers because it's intimidating for a lot of people to start triathlon. There's a lot to learn. And if you don't have a coach,
it's a lot to learn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And especially as like a woman, I think there's another piece of it too. Like cycling itself is a really male, I mean, triathlon's male dominant, but cycling especially. And so it can be really nerve wracking to go to group ride and there's 50 men, you're the only woman, you don't know how to ride a bike very well. Like that's kind of, so like my first group ride was with her in Tucson and a bunch of ex pros. So it was really hard, but you know, she made sure that I learned from the best quickly. And so even like, I'm a very good descender, partly because I've never descended incorrectly. So I've never had like an unstable bike descending. So I can be pretty confident. Because I've never had less like a barrier to understand how to do it. So it's those things that matter. And that's why I'm so passionate about coaching beginner triathletes, because it's those things that make such a difference in the foundation of how you train. And you see a lot of people that go from like zero to Ironman and they're out because the training is too hard. They didn't have the foundation. They weren't prepared for it. Like I like to take athletes slowly. And I didn't do my first Ironman. I think it was 3 years. I've been doing the sport before I did an Ironman. It took a while just to build up to it.
I like that too, like building that confidence too, because I don't different personalities too. It may just take a little bit longer to get comfortable, but if you're doing it in steps that are, you know, you can manage, then you do kind of build that longevity in the sport. So
and there's a lot of people who just train to race and they just train to do an Ironman. And like you said, they burn out in the sport as opposed to saying, hey, this is something I enjoy doing every Saturday, regardless of having a race on the calendar.
Yeah.
You find the right crew, you find the right, the friends and you go out and you enjoy the sports of triathlon.
Exactly. I mean, my favorite part of the sports are training, right? Like I love training. Yeah. I love long bike rides. I love long runs. Like that's why I do it. The race, you know, and the racing's great too, but I don't train to race. I do it. It's a lifestyle. It's really, you know, it's why I don't have any other hobbies.
Right.
I just do this.
Definitely can keep you busy. That's for sure.
Yeah. So, is there anything else like that you find most beneficial being a coached athlete versus being a coach as well? Like, I don't know if you can give any advice to athletes who are out there who may be self-coaching currently. And they're kind of like dabbling. They think they want to coach, but they're not sure how much it'll improve their training. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think actually I've done this with a couple of my athletes where I offer like consultations. And so I'll hop on a Zoom call with them for like an hour a month and we'll go over their training and like they'll make it up themselves. I'll give them feedback. And then usually what happens is they hire me as like a full-time coach later on because the feedback is always like, that's cool, but you probably should have gone harder here, here, and here. You know, like I think that's the hard part is like when you're in your own thing, it's kind of hard to get a bird's eye view of what you need. And you do need a lot. You need strategic efforts. And most people don't add in the intensity. Either they don't add it in at the right time. They don't, a lot of times don't add in enough, or because they're not accountable to anybody else. You can tell like when they're doing VO2s, like they're just not quite going as hard as you know that they could. And like, sure, one session, fine. But you're talking about a year of training. Like that makes a huge difference. Those like 2%, 4%, 10% differences and adds up. And so I think that's the biggest difference is it's useful to have somebody outside of yourself looking at the full picture of where you want to go. Like when I look at an athlete, we start in January. I know they want to go, you know, this race in May, want to do a 70.3 in August. And then by October, they want to be ready to race an Ironman. And we're training now for that A race in Ironman. When you're in it yourself, you're kind of thinking about like, what's your next race and how are you prepared? It's a lot harder to see the full picture. And that's where coaches really help is like, what's the full picture going to look like for them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You hit on a lot of really good things. Our last podcast was on coaching. And I think you hit on three or four of those like top five things that we talk about. But I've done something similar too, where I'll say, hey, just here's the link to my coaching account for Training Peaks. just jump on and then I'll just look from a distance and I'll give you feedback after a month of viewing. And generally you're right. It's that accountability piece to, did you really hit the zones that you should have? If nobody is watching, you probably wouldn't. We were just chatting before mm-hmm. this podcast about how I do that to myself if I'm mm-hmm. not being coached and not having somebody look after it. Or and it's absolutely true.
Like paces too. Like I know Mike coaches me, but like he'll give me paces and I'm like, there's no way I can hit that.
Right.
And then you go and do it and you're like, wow, actually I can. But had I been coaching myself, I never would have put that in.
Yeah. 620 pace, no way.
Yeah. I think that's the thing too. Like the trying to get to Kona was a dream that I had a really long time. And I didn't believe that I could do it, but my coach believed I could. And so I like would just borrow her belief. And I was like, you know what? Like I trust Marilyn, period. And if she thinks I can do it, she must see something I don't. So I'm going to act as if it's true because I trust her. And then eventually, like I was able, like through training and racing, to have confidence that I would do it as well. And that was like the switch that had to happen for me to qualify. But like, that's where coach comes in too. Like I believe in my athletes to their full potential way more than they do almost always. Yeah, and so like, right. if they need a little bit of support, like you can trust me. Like I see it. You know, I think that like that outside belief to like add into what you're doing is what gets you over the humps and the barriers, the plateaus. Either it's from like putting those races that like you wouldn't normally do for yourself, but your coach believes you. I'll do that too. I'd be like, she's out of her mind if she thinks I'm going to hold this pace for 22 minutes. I'm like, well, I'll try. We'll see, you know, and then I'll do it. So it's like, it's little things like that all the way to like, I don't know if I can get to Kona, but she thinks I can. So let me try.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Mm-hmm. So when did you set your sights on qualifying for Kona? Did you have a race kind of in mind that you signed up with that goal?
I mean, I think that was always my goal and like it's always my goal in the back of the head. Like I'm going to start doing Ironmans to get to Kona. So let me like, you know, get the first one out of the way and then we'll see what happens. And then COVID hit. So like COVID kind of threw like a wrench into like all of that. So the first, like coming out of COVID, the first race that I was signed up for was Ironman Coeur d'Alene, which is in fact where I qualified. And so I definitely like really set my sights on for that one.
Was that your first Ironman or had you done Ironman prior?
No. So my first one I did 2019, I did Santa Rosa and Arizona.
Okay.
In the same year. That's right. And then it was going into, I can't even think what race I was signed up for. At some point, 2020, I had some other races I was signed up mm-hmm. for that I was targeting for Kona. Didn't happen. And so then being Ironman Coeur d'Alene, that was like the first one back that I could target. Because that was my third Ironman that I did that I qualified.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Obviously there's a progression there. You learn something from the first couple. That was for me too. It was the third Ironman that I did where I qualified for. And the progression that I had from each one was significant. You had, some people think, you know, obviously the break of COVID was tough for some athletes, but for me, I took it as an opportunity. Hey, I don't have any races on the schedule. I'm just going to put my head down and train consistently. And I saw huge gains that year. And I know other athletes that did too. So was that helpful for you not to have any races in the calendar and you just followed the training plan because you enjoy training?
Yeah. And for sure. And because I think we forget how much we have to recover from Ironmans. At least I do. Like it's a significant amount of time. Like I didn't have to recover from anything. So like you just kept on clicking it away. And so like, you know, you do like four races a year. That's like I don't know, maybe 2.5 months of recovery that you're doing throughout the year that you now didn't have to do. What I did do is I did epic things. So I ran I ran up and down the Grand Canyon. I did this like mountain and I did like half of an Everest. I would have 125 miles, you know, but it wasn't racing. I was like, sure. Like what stupid thing can I find friends to do? We'll just go out there for hours. And so what I did is I did a lot of like really intense endurance training that I typically like wouldn't have done because I would have had races in the way. And so it was a really good avenue to kind of build up. So it ended up being a great building year for me. And I got really confident in my abilities to be out on the road for many hours that normally I wouldn't have experienced.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you remember most from Coeur d'Alene? Whether like the race day, crossing the finish line.
It was so hot.
It was the hottest race ever. I remember seeing this. I mean, so Lionel was out there walking. Yeah. Yeah.
I know. I mean, I'm from Phoenix. So this, it suited me really well. It's hilly and it's hot. And I know one thing is I know how to hydrate and fuel in heat, and it's a dry heat. as I learned in Kona, humidity is a different. I actually don't know how to raise humidity. So I learned that this year. But the dry heat I had. And so I remember being just so hot. It was like, I think that what stands out in my mind is like running and people were literally falling off to the side, like in crams and like vomiting on the side. It was like a war zone. Wow, this is intense. Yeah. And so I had my stepdaughter, her partner, and my daughter were all, there's like a park there that you run through. And there was more spots for Kona because of COVID. And so I didn't like totally know where I had to be placement wise, but I figured if I was like eighth, I'd be okay. And they're like, you know, and they told me where I was and I was like eighth, but people were catching me. And I was like, but, you know, I was like, okay. I was like, if I can just maintain this pace, I think I can do it. Like, I think I can do it. So it was the last lap was maintaining that pace. And like, anytime I would back off, I'd be like, you're not losing this now. It's 104. You can run in this. Like nobody else can run in this, but you, like you will stay. And negative splitting that marathon. And qualifying for Kona. So, and it was the first time I've ever nailed an Ironman. Like I actually nailed it. Like negative splitting the marathon to me is like, I clearly nailed it. So that was it was a really big deal.
Yeah. You don't hear too many negative splits. Plus that heat, it just got hotter and hotter throughout that entire run. So to do that, that means you paced yourself really well at the beginning and fueled right. I mean, you had to nail the whole race plan. So that's really cool.
Didn't people call it Corda Flames? I think. I don't know if you heard that. I heard someone else refer to it as that. So, oh goodness.
So Jennifer, we haven't brought this up yet. I apologize, but the one of the big reasons we wanted to have you on the podcast was to highlight the race that's coming up in 9 or 10 weeks, depending on when this podcast airs. So it's Mission Kona. It's getting to Kona. You're going to be racing the first North American Ironman of 2023, Ironman Texas, with a goal of Kona qualifying, right?
Yep. Yep. I'm going to go back. That was a lot of fun.
It looked like a lot of fun. And now you're going to have the full race. It's all going to be women there and it's going to be, it'll be really interesting to see how everything plans out.
Yeah.
But I think it should be a lot of fun. So tell us about, so why did you choose Texas? What was the thought process?
Yeah. So honestly, Texas is not a great course for me. I'm a really good climber, both like I do a lot of trail running. So in Costa Rica, I do lots of climbing. Because Phoenix is so hot, it's really hard to race a summer race because it's really hard to get the training in. You can't really get the intensity in the heat. So I like to race bookends. I race like spring and fall, is typically how I do my like Ironmans. And so it was the only one that worked in my schedule because Tulsa is right after we go to Pura Vida in May. And it's just, I can't go from that and race an Ironman. It's just not going to work. So Texas it is. Here we go. And also I did so many, I mean, I did St. George was unbelievably hilly. And then I did the Starvation Try, which was ungodly hilly. And then I did Kona, but I really, like, I haven't raced like a flat fast. And I've done Arizona, but like, it's been a while. So like, I'm kind of excited. It's a nice change of pace to like, just be in my TT bars, counting it out, like trying to get fast on the run. Like it's a nice change from last year, which was like mostly all hills.
Yeah. And it can be the bike, depending on the weather conditions of the day. I mean, it could be very windy and the wind acts like a hill. I mean, you just got to be narrow in aero, hopefully the whole time. Like, hopefully, is that something that you and your coach are working on, making sure you're comfortable in aero and trying to stay small?
Yeah. And I've really worked on it a lot over the years too. Like if you look at my aero positions, like photos is kind of amazing to see how dramatically it shifted. Cause I race Arizona a lot too. Same thing. You should be in aero for 99% of that race. So actually last time I did Arizona 2 years ago, I had this like crazy ear infection and I couldn't swim for like 3 weeks and I could barely run like right before the race. And I couldn't even be on the road cause I didn't have my equilibrium was off. And so when I could finally ride, I couldn't do any efforts. And so I just went on one stretch of road and I just worked my aero position over and over and over again. Cause I was like, if I'm going to do anything this race, it's going to be because I stayed super aero cause I'm going to be lacking in the power. And it totally worked. Like it's a huge difference in my position just from those like 6 weeks working on it than before. So, I just raced a 20K TT on Sunday in an effort to stay super windy. Roads are terrible condition, really high efforts, tucked in aero. So I'm really trying to focus. It's those things like when you get towards like the top of the age group, that is a significant difference. Like how can I be as tucked in as possible for as long as possible? Same watts, but like faster. That's the, you know, name of the game.
Yeah, it is. It is quite important. That's the some of the biggest changes I've made on the bike. It's not necessarily my FTP is increasing. It's just my drag is reduced to the point where I can hold 23, 24 miles per hour on 220 watts, where other people that are not as aero are having to ride a lot harder, or you know, they have a higher FTP, but I can save some energy and ride in the pack. And we're working on Michelle and her aero skills. Yep.
I've got
the reason she lacks the aero is the comfort on the bike. So we that's the area that we just need to get her to the point where she can trust that she can, because she can like pound out the power on the trainer, no problem. But it's out on the road,
getting on the getting comfortable on the road, for sure.
And I do find a lot of athletes too, especially now, tend to ride the trainer too much. Mm-hmm. You know, in general, especially if you're an aero, like there's so much road vibrations that you have to get strong enough to handle. And if you're not out there doing that, like you're going to be exhausted when you get done with your ride. You're not going to know why, and it's going to affect your run. Like it's those things like that really start to matter. Is like, are you, even if this, I mean, your long rides, but like, what are your smaller rides like? Are you in race aero position or are you in like safety aero position? Because those are two separate positions to be in. Like those are the kind of things that like matter significantly on race day.
Yeah. Well, that'll be exciting to see how that course goes for you. Like you said, with racing, a lot of the hilly courses, you may surprise yourself. So.
Yeah. And it's a point to point swim, right? Yeah. So the swim is, it's usually wetsuit legal, right? Is that right?
Yes. I think so. I don't think I've seen a non-wetsuit legal.
No. Yeah. And the bike is like a double out and back. The run's three laps. Mm-hmm. Super hot. Some years it's been incredibly hot, but you can handle that. You've proven that you can handle that.
Yeah. So what are you doing now? What would you say are kind of your key workouts that you're doing now here? What, like we said, about 10 weeks out, what does your training look like volume wise?
This is my first 20, I think I have 22 hours of training this week, which is a lot.
It's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
It's a lot. And usually I don't quite get here as quick, but I have a camp coming up. So not this coming weekend, I'm going to go to camp for a week in Tucson with my coach and teammates. So part of it is to get the notch, the volume up, I'll recover next week. And then it'll probably be like a 30 hour week of training with camp. Which is great. I've never raced. I'll be 6 weeks out when camp's. I've never raced that close post camp, and I'm very excited because I get like a huge fitness boost from it. I'm really looking forward to that. So right now I'm doing a lot of VO2 stuff, a lot of threshold stuff. I'm actually doing a lot of group riding, which I haven't typically done before in the past, but my endurance at this point of doing this for 6 years, and I just did Pura Vida in May and January again. So that's 5 days of like intensive riding. My endurance is quite high on the bike. And so we're trying to get the threshold up higher so I can produce more power on the bike. And then the run, we're just now starting to hit. I'm just now finally being able to run fast. It took a while from off season to like, you know, your legs are like lead forever. It feels like. Right. So they're just now coming back. And so I'm just now able to actually do some like getting up to like 17.3 paces, Ironman paces for, I think, how my first kind of a 14 mile run on Sunday. So just now starting to get to longer runs with Ironman paces. And those are my bread and butter. Usually runs are 3 miles, slightly faster than Ironman pace, and then like 2 or 3 minutes, you know, rest, and then do it again, you know, for 15 miles. Like that's, I do a lot of just like being an Ironman pace for long time. That's bread and butter for running.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're doing big volume and it sounds like you have a good mixture of some high intensity. Generally, it's hard to do big volume and that VO2 max just because it's hard on the body. But I think you're at the right point in the phase to do it, because as it gets closer to the race time, you're not going to be doing as much VO2 max. You'll be doing more race pace stuff kind of trying to tune that engine. But you can definitely get some fitness boosts by pulling up your power from the top, and then you can push it up from the bottom with the volume. So. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. This will probably, I have a group ride this week and next week, probably be my last group rides before the race, you know, cause then we'll be 6 weeks out and then it's no group rides and just, you know, just TT bike. So
are these group rides with, just triathletes, road riders?
No, these are they're mostly, well, yeah, they're mostly men. Very fast group, very good, very fast group rides. Like, I don't know if I can hang on to the front group. If I am, I'm like, you know, like eyes are like popping out of my brain. So I try.
Oh yeah. Heels, yeah. Right? Yeah. I do a lot of those.
It's really intense.
I used to do a lot of them, and then my coaches would always yell at me, like, "Mike, you went way too hard," and like, "Well, like they were racing to that stop sign, or they like it, like I, you know how sometimes the guys get they they want to show off and they do these like watt bombs, and I'm like, I'm a triathlete, like I don't like I don't need to have 1,000 watt sprint. I need to be able to hold 240 watts for an Ironman, you know, but.
I love when we go fast because I can get really tiny because I'm a triathlete, right? And so people hate being behind me because I blocked like zero wind for them because I'm tiny to begin with. And then I can get like super low. Sorry, guys.
Right.
That's great. And it's probably perfect weather right now in Arizona. I know we were out there, I guess a year ago this time. Yep. So probably pretty comfortable. You're not dealing with the really high temps quite yet. So
a little chilly in the morning, but
it's a little chilly. It doesn't get hot till June in my opinion. So we've got great weather right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We were in like, that was our first experience of Phoenix. And that's the next, like, what do you like most about living and training in Phoenix? Tell us about like what you have in that area for triathletes.
Oh my gosh. I think it's like a dream place to live in Arizona and in like specifically. But I live in the middle of Phoenix and I run 1 mile along the canal, which I can run for 30 miles in either direction with very little, like, I don't have to like drive really across very little streets. It's just a canal with a dirt path. If I run another mile, I'm in the middle of trails. We have like big mountains in the middle of the city, tons of trails that are 20 minutes away from just driving, which is amazing. I personally have to drive to ride somewhere long, but it's like a 30 minute drive and I'm in the middle of like deserts by myself riding bikes. So I think it's great. I mean, I think it's an amazing, and we have outside pools year round outside, like full competition pools that are just beautiful, very cheap. And then the people here are just really athletic and very like outdoors people, because we have all these amazing things to be outdoors for, and you can train year round. Like, yes, it is very hot in the summertime, but you can wake up earlier. You can still get in rides. You can still train. If you really need to do speed stuff, you do it inside. But it's year-round training almost exclusively. Yesterday it rained. Like, maybe yesterday is the day you couldn't ride for all of 2023. You've had one day that maybe would have been kind of shitty riding. So it's great. It's a great community. It's a really robust cycling community. And then you have Tucson is an hour and a half away. I ride a lot in Tucson. My coach is there. If you want mountains, Flagstaff's a mile and a half, hour and a half, the other direction, you have Sedona. There's so many opportunities for being outside year round. That's amazing.
Yeah. We loved it. It was cool. We were only there for 3 days. We raced the Mesa Marathon and, we drove to Flagstaff. We did the drive, like the scenic drive,
through Sedona.
Oh, it's my favorite. I love riding that. That's a great road to ride.
Oh,
oh my gosh. The switchbacks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
That'd be interesting. I guess we were like in run mode then, but super pretty. We get kind of bitter this time of year because we live in the Midwest and it's not.
No, you can't. Not great. You can't train outside like hardly at all. This has been a mild winter for us in Iowa, but as we're doing this podcast, we're getting prepared for 6 to 8 inches of snow and 40-mile-per-hour winds. So that's happening tonight. Yeah, we loved our time in Phoenix and Mesa. Yeah. And,
we did get to go swim out there too. That was fun. We did.
I wish I remembered the name of that pool. I think
it was in Phoenix.
It was a town near Phoenix, but it was it's where Pedro Gomez swims all the time.
It was probably their Cactus Pools or El Dorado.
I think it was Cactus.
They have great pools. It's probably Cactus. They're like, there's a pool here and a pool here.
Yeah, that was great.
We get Olympians all the time out training. Like, that's in the front. And, you know, we have lots of just athletes in town all the time. That's a blast to be around too.
Yeah, I can see that.
And you're heading to Tucson for the camp. So you'll be riding up Mount Lemmon like every day.
Yes.
Is that the goal?
I wish. No, we'll do Mount Lemmon. We'll do Madera. It's a great ride. There's so many great rides in Tucson. So, and we'll swim at the U of A pool there, and then we'll run, you know, out and around. So it'll be a good time.
Yeah. So back on Ironman Texas, what are some of your goals? Like, now we're 10 weeks out. Have you and your coach talked about specific goals, whether it's time, placement, anything like that? Or is that something that you don't really do? Like those actual, like, I hate to say, like, I want to finish top 5. I want to finish podium. Or is it more less
race yeah. the best you can and show up as your best self.
I joke with some of my athletes. I'm like, hey, one of your goals needs to be to smile at every volunteer or like something like that. It's like, so it's not an, yeah. not a physical,
not
like,
a tangible, not, yeah.
yeah, not a tangible goal, but it's something that you can do to change, yeah. change your poor attitude if your race isn't going well.
Yeah. yeah. I kind of do a little bit of both. So the only time school I've ever said is I tried to go under 5 hours at Indian Wells and I went 5:02. And that's not typically how I did it. I kind of did it. I was supposed to race St. George, the World Championships in 2023. And because of some family issues, I couldn't. And so like, I was like, well, shoot, I'll do this instead. So like in 6 weeks, I was like, I just had to race Kona. And now I was like, oh, now I'm going to try to do the fastest 2023 I've ever done before. Like, let's see what I can do. So I did it like, just to see what could happen. For this is my first time racing in the 40 to 44 year old age group. So I get like a new age group, which is exciting. But also like, I'm not totally sure like then where like things shake out in the age group. So my goal is obviously a Kona slot. It's definitely to be on the podium. My PR is a 10:45. I'd love to beat that. And then how that plays out, I would love a PR bike split. I think that as long as, I mean, it depends on the wind, right? But it should be a course where I can get that. You know, we'll see. Arizona is pretty winning too. And that's where I have the current one. So I think we'll see like how it plays out. I don't really know what it's going to be. I need to be further along in my training. I need a couple of like key sessions. So I know what I feel like in my body. And I haven't had those yet. Like I need like an 18-mile run with efforts to see like what I think a marathon is going to feel like. I still need like a really hard 6-hour ride. Like those are the things that I'm waiting for. And I can be like, okay, I think it's going to be this. But because I haven't had them yet, kind of
you're still a little ways out from that. Yeah, like I agree. I think usually it's 3 or 4 weeks before the race is when you really, that's the hardest time of the training too. You're doing the most volume. You haven't quite gotten to taper yet and you know, it's close, but then you're also doing really long race specific stuff. But that's also where you're like, you finish that and you're like, oh wow, I've got that. Like I had one of those.
Exactly.
And when I was training for Ironman Wisconsin, it was a 5-hour bike ride. And then I think it was 6 miles off the bike at race pace. And I did it and I was like, oh, I feel great. Like, okay.
I usually have a 5-hour ride and like a 2-hour, like a really hard 2-hour run afterwards. And that's usually the like,
all right. Exactly.
As long as you don't burn it. But and also I think it's hard when the first race of the season, you always don't quite know. If this was like the second Ironman I was doing this year, I'd probably have a pretty good idea. But like off season is so dramatic. When you come back from off season, you're like, oh, I don't know about this.
Yes. Yeah. So what would you say is your strongest discipline, having not really had a lengthy background in any of them? Yeah.
It's definitely cycling. I love being on the bike. I'm a very strong cyclist. Typically I ride hard and then I like try to stave off somebody on the run is like typically what happens. The run's gotten better. I nega split. I negative split Ironman Arizona and Ironman St. George, which I was really proud of. So like, I do like have the ability to pull out like a really good run for me. It's that like fine balance of like how hard you ride versus run. So
exactly. That was my next question is, do you pull back a little bit on the power on the bike? Cause that's your strength to have a stronger run. I mean,
Yeah, we've done that. So now the goal is like, can we bike a little bit harder and then still have the run? Like that's, we're trying to find like, what's that balance, you know, look like? I did not accomplish in the Indian Wells. It's not what happened because I was going for time. So I was just like, this is a split I need. Here I go. And then, So it's always playing around with those pieces, but I love being on my bike. And my biggest issue is that I can have a little bit of like an ego on the bike. And so like, I really have to like, be like, okay, you don't need to go with that person. Like you can just like, you really don't need to do 230 watts. This is ridiculous. Like I have to really be careful. Cause I will, if I'm just like racing and going, I'll just go with the people because that's more fun. Yeah. So I've got to like really dial it back.
And Texas can be kind of crowded too. And then, all of a sudden, like there's a pack of, 20 guys that go flying past you and you get frustrated. Like they're drafting and it's like, but I'm sure you'll keep it together. You'll focus on your plan and you'll execute. So I certainly look forward to following you over the next, 10 weeks, see how your training's going and, hopefully you're healthy and strong and ready to race well.
And the camp should be fun. There'll be lots of photos of like many people like on the side of the road exhausted. So a lot of the camp photos look like, and eating lots of food.
Yeah. So kind of like wrapping us up here, what is a piece of advice you have either as a coach or as an athlete yourself, an athlete trying to qualify for Kona, if they have that as a goal, what kind of advice might you give them?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is one, you have to believe that you can do it. That's just the number one thing, but like, you don't have to 100% believe that you can do it, but like, be somewhere on the belief spectrum between like 1 and 100, like, you know, 60%, 70%, but like really work on that and find ways to prove to yourself that that's right to believe that. Like, finally get that workout that you're like, I nailed that workout. And when the other one's not going well, go back to the workout that you nailed, right? Like, you get to choose what you focus on what increases your belief in yourself, so that when you show up to race day, you know that you have that. And then the other thing is to know that, like, you know, I tell myself before every race, and it happens in every build, that you're going to have ups and downs, and nothing has gone wrong. Some days are going to be awesome. Some days are going to totally blow. It doesn't mean that you're not going to get to Kona or the race is going to suck. It's just what happens in training. Like, your training, if you do it right, you should have good days and bad days. Like, if you're nailing every workout, you're doing something wrong in your training plan. Like, you shouldn't be nailing every workout. You should have days where you're just like, I can't even get that effort in. You know, like, that's how you know you're getting the right adaptations. And so I think it's those pieces of like making sure you just know, like, whatever is coming to you, you can handle. So on race day, you're going to have highs and lows in the race, and both are going to pass. Highs and lows in training, both are going to pass. But stick with your belief and keep moving forward in that belief, and that's what's going to get you there.
I love it. I think we didn't talk too much about the mental side. I know you brought it up in the beginning. That's one of your strengths. The both things you said is just about, like, how do you reframe a negative situation and make it positive? And you clearly have a very positive outlook on things. And for you, you had a coach that said, you can do this. And that's all you needed, right? You had somebody that gave you a little bit of a belief, and you went from maybe 10% to 50%. And then all of a sudden it snowballed into you got there. Right. Mm-hmm. And how I think we could all be a little bit more positive about things and look at things through a different lens. So I love that.
I think we tend to like dwell on the workouts. I mean, anything in life, but definitely the workouts that didn't go right, you know, and that can really bog you down versus acknowledging the ones that did go well, or the ones you showed up for and completed, you know.
Or say, hey, I just did 20 hours of training this week. Like,
that's a win.
It wasn't 20 perfect hours, but I did 20 hours of training. And that's a huge accomplishment.
Yeah. And it's expecting yourself not to be perfect in the 20 hours. And that's the other piece of it. Just like, if you have a bad workout, that's what's supposed to happen. Nothing's gone wrong. And that's what happened is, people have a bad workout and they freak out that this isn't the way it's supposed to be. That's totally how it's supposed to be. It's an Ironman. Like, when you get to a race and you get off the bike and your legs feel like lead, that doesn't mean you can't run 26 miles really fast. It just means that's where your legs feel like right now. Like, so that, you know, when we start like freaking out about things aren't like going right, like, quote unquote, that's when like ships start to sink really fast.
Yeah.
But if you just are accepting of where they are and don't make it mean anything, then you can keep going. Like, I didn't have 100% belief I was going to Kona until mile 20 of that run in Coeur d'Alene. Like, that's how long it took me to get to the 100%. But once I had it, I wasn't giving up. Like, no way was I going to lose that spot once I was there. So it's just that, just know that, like, nothing, you know, get a flat tire, problems happen, you drop nutrition, like, that's all going to happen in Ironman. Everything's okay. It's all fixable. Just keep going.
Yep. Oh, I like that.
All right. So we have some quick wrap-up questions. These are meant to be more fun, short answers or long answers, whatever. We have no rules. But Michelle, do you have any questions here that you want to start?
Yeah. I like this one. What is the worst race weather you've had?
Oh God. It was the Lake Placid. It was 35 degrees. Like the temperature was 30. I was coming from Phoenix. It was 110 when I left, and the race was 35 degrees.
Oh my goodness.
Wow. Yeah. So 35 in the morning in the swim, getting off and riding on a cold bike. Yes. Like,
yeah. And you go like straight downhill. It was. Yeah, it was. I don't think I felt my feet until like mile 11 of the run.
Oh yeah. No, I think I had a couple cold races this year, and I swear, like, it was so mentally exhausting. And you know, you get to the races so early, and yes. they kick you out of transition and you're just in a wetsuit with like, you know, flip-flops or something, keeping your feet off
bare
the ground.
Feet, yeah.
But yep. then you're thinking, I'm going to be soaking wet and I'm going to get on this bike and it's going to be so cold. Yeah. Yeah. And hopefully every race I do this upcoming year is warm.
And like the extra energy that take, like, you know, just your body to like try to keep itself warm. I think that's something that people don't always factor in, that they're shivering and, you know.
Oh yeah. A lot of people will bonk when it's free. I will bonk when it's cold out because I will forget the extra sugar that I have to take in because it's so cold.
Yeah. Or it's hard to take your nutrition because you can't grip onto it.
Yeah, when you can't like feel your fingers, it's kind of hard. Yeah. I had one race where I would open my zipper and I was like throwing my hand in because I couldn't feel anything. And my brother grab it and like shove it in my mouth.
Whatever you come out with.
When I think I got something.
Yeah. All right. So we're speaking about nutrition. What is your go-to nutrition? Do you have like specific brands that you use? What's your favorite like goo flavor as well? So there's a couple questions there, but.
Okay. Well, I hate gels. So no gels for me. I'm anti-gel. I actually am really excited. I just got partnered with Noon Hydration for this year. So I'm going to be using all Noon products for all my racing, which I'm stoked about.
Nice.
So, and actually I use them a lot with my daughter too. She loves like the immunity stuff and the wellness. Yeah. And so I've been using that. And then I really like Cliff Blocks and Scratch Chews for that. And then I use SIS gels as my go-to for gels because they don't take
it. If you have to take a gel.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those aren't gels. I mean, they're gels. They're in a packet. They're more liquid. But like, they're more liquid. And because you don't need to take water with them, you don't have to like time your aid stations.
Yep.
So I use those on the marathon.
Yeah, those sit pretty well with my stomach too.
Yeah, you use
the
isotonic,
I think, is what the technical. Exactly. Yeah. So Noon is your electrolytes, and then you're using those other options, whether they're chews, gels, like for all your drinking is all either water or electrolytes. You don't put any like sports drink or anything.
Yeah. So Noon has the endurance package, which has calories in it too. So
oh, I didn't know that. Okay. That's good.
Yeah. I try to get roughly like, I can hold a lot of calories. I'm anywhere between like 380 to 400 calories an hour on the bike, which is a lot for a person my size. I've like really worked really hard at that. Yeah. And that's mostly all like, I would classify blocks as like mostly all liquid blocks is like, they're not really food either. So, I'm all science when I train and race. That's how I roll. And then all like SIS stuff. And then usually like halfway through the marathon, I'll switch to Coke and Gatorade. And then at that time, it's like whatever sounds fine is what
whatever your stomach can take.
Whatever works. Like sure.
Like I said, these are supposed to be short answer questions. We've gotten through two in 5 minutes, so this is going perfect. This is going awesome.
No, this is totally fine. So to keep it on the food wave, what's your favorite junk food?
Ice cream, hands down ice cream. I'm vegan though. So it's anything like oat milk, whatever, whatever substitute of milk ice cream with lots of like peanut butter in it. And I'm fine.
Sure.
All right. So I'm the bike like nerd. Tire. Let's talk about bike tires. Do you have race tires? Are you using tubeless? Like latex, what's your tire pressure? Let's go through all the tire stuff.
Okay. So I race on MV78s and I use latex tubes and Conti 5000s.
Perfect. Great. I've talked to other athletes who are like, my goal is to qualify for Kona. I'm running gator skins with
normal
tubes. And I'm like, hold on, we can save you about 30 watts. Let's start there. But you're in good shape. You don't, there's nothing that can be saved.
Yeah, I'm good. And I'm really excited. I just got some Tri-Rig aero brakes as well. They just, I'm now just partnering with them. So I have a P3 and I'm a big fan of rim brakes for TT bikes. I don't even like the disc brakes I got a whole other thing I'm going to rant about disc brakes, unnecessary for TT bikes. So I have a P3 rim brake with Tri-Rig and all the stuff on it.
Well, I switched to disc brakes and it may have saved me in Wisconsin because it never stopped raining in the hills. But I do have the Tri-Rig aero skewers that I can't use. So if you need them, I can send them to you. They save like
fantastic.
3 watts. 3 watts.
I'll take them. I'll take it. I'm in.
I love it. That's
cool. Most of this goes over my head. So good. Good to know.
And you're already sponsored by Tri-Rig, but they're like $120 skewers. Like
yes.
I mean, it's a little ridiculous, but it's a watt is a watt.
Right.
If you know how hard you have to work to save a watt.
All right. We like to wrap up with, we're big fans of coffee. So what is your go-to coffee order?
It's a cappuccino with oat milk, and I have my own espresso machine that makes cappuccinos for me. And I
travel. You are a triathlete for sure.
So when I drive, I take out my full Nespresso machine and I bring it with me. Yep. So I'm very, very sticky, very particular about my coffee.
That's awesome.
You don't love have it. Like, you don't have the travel AeroPress. You bring the whole cappuccino, the espresso.
Well, when I drive, when I fly, I have the travel AeroPress.
All right.
That's where you draw the line. Okay.
That's where I draw the line.
I love it. This has been a fun conversation. I really appreciate your time. Obviously you have a crazy busy schedule. You're training at a very high level, with big goals. So thank you for taking the time with Mission Kona Podcast.
Yeah.
Where can the listeners of the podcast follow you? What are your social media places? Are you on Strava? Those kinds of things.
I am. I mean, I think you have to be on Strava. I don't think
of course. So. Yeah. Even when they increase prices, you still have to be on Strava. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I kind of know what place I was. Oh, yeah. So on Strava, it's my name, Jennifer Vollmann. And then Instagram too, just my name, Jennifer Vollmann. And then my coaching company is Finding Endurance. We have a website that you can check it out and has all my coaching stuff on there too. And I write, I do a lot of like race reports and thoughts on training and racing and mindset. I write a blog on there and that kind of stuff. So it's all there.
That's awesome.
Cool. Yeah. We found you on Instagram. You've got a huge following. You do an awesome job. Your posts are really well done. So
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool. We're super excited to follow you this year through Ironman Texas and all the other things I know that you're going to accomplish this year. So best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Have a good upcoming week.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks guys.
Thank you for listening to Mission Kona Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode.
Do you know an athlete who has a great story for a future podcast? Send us a message at missionkonapodcast.com.
Reach out anytime through our website or on Instagram at Mission Kona Podcast.
Till next time, think positive, have fun, and stay focused on your mission to Kona.